Welcome to the Atom Podcast. I'm here with Ashley Ismail from MyDrive.
Hey there, really good to be here.
So MyDrive is a very interesting company. When I first came across it, it kind of blew my mind simply from the fact that I passed my driving test 24 years ago and I never really looked back at it, didn't think of it. So let's talk a bit about MyDrive. Obviously, the listeners out there need to understand what the company does and who you are.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody remembers their, you know, learn to drive experience. You might remember, you know, your instructor, the car you learned in, passing your test. Actually, everyone remembers passing their test. You know, I certainly do because it was getting freedom. You know, even if I still had to ask my mom to, you know, borrow her keys to the car. So, you know, being able to be part of that journey for young people is a really great opportunity. Because also learn to drive is a rite of passage. You know, it's actually about growing up. And in growing up, suddenly you realize you need a bunch of different things. You need to figure out, where am I going to get that first car? How am I going to insure it? How am I going to finance it? And MyDrive wants to be the brand that's helping them do that. So we're, you know, reinventing driving and insurance for the digital generation.
So I guess one of the big questions is obviously around engaging millennials. How do you engage millennials to use your service?
Well, I think, you know, our big difference has been, you know, using mobile apps and cloud technology to give people a better experience. So, you know, the learn to drive industry is quite broken. You know, 53% of people fail their first test. 1 in 5 crash in the first 6 months. And that makes the cost of insurance incredibly high. And, you know, we believe there has to be a better way. And what we've done is actually, one, connected the best instructors in the country. So we only work with the guys who have the highest ratings. But then also the ones who stay on our platform are the ones who have the top reviews. We also use, you know, digital apps to provide a curriculum, because one of the crazy things in the UK is there is no standard curriculum for learning how to drive. So we actually worked with the former CEO of the DVSA, Alistair Peebles, who basically joined our team when he left the DVSA because he was so impressed with, you know, the results that we were getting for learners.
And so just to interrupt there, so actually, you mean that, because this is something I didn't know, so around the country you can, there's no real standard methodology for testing people?
Yeah, so, you know, when you get in the car, the challenge is that you actually don't know what is it you're supposed to be learning. And so you get in these situations where, for example, you've done 20 hours and then your instructor turns to you and says, hey, I think you need 5 more. And you're like, well, do I really need 5 more, or are incentives just not aligned? And so what we do is we give you a mobile app that shows you all the different elements you need to learn, how you compare to other learners, gives you insights about how you can actually, you know, make the most of your next lesson.
All right, so just talk a little bit about the app. So for obviously people listening won't really understand, well, they won't know, hopefully they will know, but they might not know how the app functions and how the business functions. Can you just talk a little bit about?
Yeah, so, you know, we're a marketplace business. So we connect learners and instructors together as our first line. And, you know, by matching them using a smart algorithm so that they can start quickly and have really great lessons. We have, you know, our apps for instructors and learners. So instructors, you know, get a notification about a new learner in their area. They can manage the scheduling and communications, get their payments. And on the learner side, learners get access to, you know, some of that same information around scheduling, but also critically lesson reports where they can actually get feedback. They can share with, you know, mom and dad as well to show them how they're progressing and, you know, how they can do better.
So the matching piece, how does that work? I mean, obviously,
it sounds more complex than it is, but, you know, the reality is that it prioritizes the instructors who are the best. And also, I guess the other dimension is managing our own costs. So we think about, you know, the guy who's going to get that first notification is the combination of the highest rated and the best priced. But the challenge on the learner side is that, you know, traditionally what you're doing is you're phoning around to a bunch of different people in an offline process, trying to find an instructor who has the right car transmission, who's perhaps the right gender, and ultimately has the right availability. And so in our case, we sort that and, you know, magically we're able to match you with an instructor who meets your needs.
So this is quite fascinating, actually, because, I mean, it's hard enough to build a marketplace. I mean, let's say from previous experience, working in the fintech sector, you know, where we were trying to match suppliers and funders, just trying to get both online at the same time was pretty difficult. And here you've got not just getting the instructors and the learners, but you're also looking at specific sets of you know, instructors that fulfill certain criteria. So how did you actually start to build that marketplace? I mean, what came first?
Yeah, so in every marketplace, you know, either you need to build supply or demand first. In our case, we really focused on supply first. And our rationale was, you know, if we got out and, you know, had above the line campaigns advertising, you know, for tons of learners, the risk would be that we wouldn't be able to match them. And then they'd have a bad experience and, you know, that would erode the trust in the marketplace. And so instead, you know, what we did is we actually got more instructors than anyone else in the country. So, you know, we just...
How did you do that?
And I guess the approach was a couple different things. One was, you know, we started with a pocket of liquidity. So it was, you know, going market by market and, you know, building a local base there and starting to build some learners behind it. The other part was, you know, starting to get the small guys before we got the big guys. So, you know, we started first working with the individual instructors and building up to bigger schools over time. I kind of took a lesson from, you know, when I worked at Money Supermarket, Simon Nixon, who's the founder of Money Supermarket. One of the things he did was, you know, to build, you know, the platform that is now, you know, this huge comparison site. It started as, you know, Mortgage 2000, which was actually just a printed out list of all the mortgage deals you could get. And at first, when he went to the big mortgage guys, you know, they wouldn't bother to talk to him, but he got the little ones. And eventually that meme got a bigger one and a bigger one. And so, you know, to get to the big guys, you got to get the small guys first. And that's what we did. And now, you know, we've actually just signed, you know, partnerships with some of the biggest driving schools in the country as well, who we extend our network to.
So how long did it take to get the critical mass in order for you to...
So I'd say probably this has been the really big year for us. You know, overall, it's been a 3-year kind of process of building on this model. But like this year is kind of where we really accelerated. So, you know, we doubled the number of instructors on the platform. And yeah, and as I said, now we have more than anyone else.
So I think that's one of the, you know, people starting on new businesses, that it's finding the customers and obviously building that marketplace is very, very tricky. So if you were to go about it again, what would you say, you know, what would you do differently?
So I guess, you know, other tricks, I think, in terms of the playbook of how do you build a marketplace quickly? Like, you know, one insight we had was, I call it using the honey jar, which is the idea that, you know, suppliers are, you know, much more likely to say yes if it leads to an immediate sale. So, you know, one of the things we do is we are able to, you know, go out with, you know, a learner who's purchased on our site a 30-hour package of lessons, you know, might be worth £1,000. If we're able to go and say, hey, Mr. Instructor, we have this learner for you, just sign up to our app. You know, somebody who originally would have said, hey, no way, I'm not interested, suddenly is like, all right, I'll download the app. And actually we pick up, you know, 5 more people who would otherwise not considered it.
So then how did you engage the other side, the learners?
So getting to the learners, I think, has been actually about the tools that we offer. So, you know, our app is a really differentiated experience. And so we've, you know, built that in a couple of different ways. So we have one app, which is a theory app. It's a free app. It gives you access to all the questions in the official DVSA set. And it's gamified. So rather than, you know, being a boring, like, multiple choice test, it actually makes it fun to play and, you know, compete against your friends. And if you can get one 17-year-old who needs to learn to drive and they have a good experience with you, suddenly you have 30 17-year-olds who need to learn to drive. So, you know, that capability has been there. But as well, you know, extending that into our app for learners when they're actually doing their practical tests really just gives them that additional value. And I think if you can get a group of customers who are actually passionate about what you do, that word of mouth is super powerful and really spreads.
So you mentioned parents earlier. So was it very important for you to engage parents in this process?
Absolutely. So, you know, about half of learners will, you know, buy the lessons themselves, but you'll see, you know, on our platform that half of the lessons are purchased with someone else's credit card, which I assume isn't them committing fraud, but is actually, you know, them borrowing mom and dad's card to make it happen. And, you know, how we've engaged parents is one, you know, content that helps address some of their fears, but also making them part of the process. So, you know, I remember when I learned to drive with my parents, you know, it would easily escalate into, you know, our worst nightmare, you know, where you're in a situation where you're saying, oh, my instructor taught me this way. And your mom or your dad is saying, oh, do it this other way. It's not what you want to get into. And actually what we built our anytime insurance product, which is, you know, hourly on-demand insurance that covers you for practice with a parent or friend, to incorporate this curriculum. So actually, you know, the conversation that you're navigating and, you know, getting someone to help you practice isn't actually about insurance. It's actually about, hey, do I feel confident taking you in the car? And so, you know, the content that we provide helps ease that conversation. But we're also doing some other fun things. We're planning to, you know, also introduce, you know, a module where, you know, before you actually start your driving lesson with mom, it would be, okay, pass the phone to her and, you know, listen to this track for 1 minute of, you know, relaxing music so that you put yourself in the right mindset. Because mindset is so important to actually what it takes to be a good driver.
So as you've evolved, as the business has evolved, so this is an interesting example. So have you found, are these the kind of things you incorporate in order for people to more successfully pass their test?
So absolutely. So, you know, our pass rates are 38% higher than the UK average, which is ridiculous in a way. It's like really groundbreaking results, because if you look at, you know, the differences between gender, age, test center, the differences are, you know, pretty minor actually. And so to get a 38% difference is incredible in it. And I think, you know, it's all these elements coming together to create an ecosystem that ultimately means people are just way more prepared.
Did you have much resistance early on with driving instructors, or did you find it quite easy?
So, you know, I think, you know, always in building a marketplace, one side is going to be more challenging to get on board. Typically it's supply. And, you know, what we did early on was, you know, spend a lot of time with both sides of the marketplace, understanding what their needs are. And actually, one of the things I recommend to all startup founders is to, you know, develop a lot of empathy for your customer. So, you know, do a minimum of, you know, 20 interviews with each side, understand their personas, why do they not want to be on the marketplace? And if you can crack those, your business will move so much faster.
So one of the things I saw on the website was obviously you got a very impressive rating of 5 out of 5. So how have you maintained that, and how do you ensure quality of drivers and obviously the experience?
Well, you know, in this industry, there is probably a huge variation in quality. So, you know, there are some guys who became a driving instructor because, you know, that's the only job that was available to them. But there's other guys who are extremely passionate about this. They are educators and professionals. And those are the people we want to attract. And I think our model is different from a traditional driving school because we don't teach people to teach others. So, you know, we're not an instructor trainer program. And therefore, we don't have a commitment to deliver a minimum number of learners to anyone. We, you know, pay on a commission model per lesson. And it means, therefore, we can match learners with truly the best instructor for them. And I think that's been a big factor of what really makes the difference there. But also, it's customer support. So, you know, this year we won an award for being, you know, a service business of the year. And it comes down to actually adding this human side to the world of tech. And so we have an amazing customer support team that's, you know, kind of smoothing out the issues when they occur, but then also in the back building technology that means that, you know, the things that we do in a manual way today become automated and can really scale.
See, that's very interesting because I know I signed up for a service just the other day, and I realized after about a couple of days of just being sent emails that it was a bot that was sending me emails, because I replied to it and said, stop sending me emails. I know what I'm doing. And so that's interesting, because actually really what you're saying here is that rather than trying to automate, there's certain bits of the business that you can automate and you should automate, but then obviously there's others which where really the connection with the other end, either your drivers or your learners, you need to have that human experience.
Well, you know, what's interesting, I think a lot of startup founders, you know, especially non-technical founders, they always think that their biggest risk is actually, you know, building the technology. So what they'll do is they'll really early on immediately try to get ahead of that risk by starting to build out that tech. But the truth is the biggest risk isn't actually, you know, building the tech, it's building the wrong tech.
Right.
And, you know, what we've done is kind of done a concierge service first. So we did things, you know, with the minimal amount of tech you could possibly need to actually deliver the service. And then once we actually understood what is it that our customers want, we then built that. And in that way, we create an experience that actually, you know, satisfies their needs. So, you know, we do use bots. We have an amazing bot that will talk to you on Facebook or, you know, talk to you on our customer support channels. But the way it talks to you is built off of, you know, a year of experience about what customers are actually going to ask.
And I assume it's quite limited in what it really deals with. So you pass.
Yeah, ultimately, you still have to say, hey, fetch a human when it can't figure it out. But I think learners also really appreciate that, you know, they can get that support really rapidly within their app and solve their problems through an FAQ guide or, you know, access to a video. Rather than, you know, sitting on the end of a phone waiting for 20 minutes for someone to pick up, perhaps at one of the other driving schools. So that immediacy And actually, I think really deep insight into what people really want to know is powerful.
So how do you keep the quality and scale at the same time? Because obviously, you know, you have the challenge of making sure people feel they have a personal service, like it's a concierge service, it's a personal service. But obviously, if you have an extra 20, 30, 40,000 users, you can't really then, you know, add on 20 more people to your staff.
Well, I think the best marketplaces, you know, build market by market. So if you look at, you know, how Deliveroo rolled out its strategy, right? It went by London borough by borough, making it work. The same thing with Uber, you know, started in San Francisco in a small model before expanding everywhere else. And, you know, that approach allows us to, you know, get a seed market into becoming a growth market and have the fundamental characteristics there that we know are going to keep it strong. And that's kind of our way that we keep managing, biting off just as much as we can chew.
So you're now running a crowdfunding program, or I don't know, campaign, sorry, that's the right word for it, I'm cracking. So a little bit about that, because, you know, I speak to a lot of startups, and crowdfunding is something they're obviously interested in, but they don't really know much about the process. So can you give us a little bit of an insider's view of how you chose Crowdcube, you know, why you even chose crowdfunding?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually this round that we're doing, it's actually backed by initial capital. So it's a VC-backed round, but we decided to put part of it onto Crowdcube at the same valuation, same share price, and, you know, all the same voting rights as our venture capital investors. And you're right, many people have asked us, why would you go and, you know, take on that whole experience? And fundamentally, I think looking at other, you know, marketplace businesses like Deliveroo and Uber, I think one of their big challenges has been the relationship they have with their drivers. And, you know, what we want to do is actually enable all of our instructors to actually own part of the business so that they can actually share in our success. And I think what that means is that instead of it becoming an us versus them mentality, actually we're all in this together, and they are as committed as our team is to actually build a better business.
So have you had much engagement from the drivers that way?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had, you know, some amazing instructors, you know, that we worked with a long time, be really passionate and, you know, come and, you know, shake my hand and be like, hey, I'm going to be part of your business, which is really heartwarming. And we've had, you know, some guys who were skeptical because, you know, they've never invested before. So this sounds like, you know, is this some kind of scam? You're really giving me part of your business. And, you know, it's been a journey to explain that to them. But I think it's going to be one that really could be game changing in terms of, you know, how this business operates in the future.
So how important have evangelists been to your business?
Well, you know, our reviews, you know, the fact that you mentioned, hey, we have, you know, these amazing, you know, 5-star reviews, hundreds of them now. I think, you know, the driving lesson business especially is one which is built on word of mouth. You know, most driving instructors, they don't know how to run a PPC, you know, search campaign, right? They're not going to be on Facebook producing paid ads. So, you know, we do those things, and that's part of our advantage. But fundamentally, I think somebody recommending a business to you is just incredibly powerful, especially for something which is so personal, where you're going to be spending time with another human being. And so, you know, mastering that has been really critical. And actually more and more of our new business comes from referrals.
So it's very interesting, actually, because I remember from my school, we pretty much, I think we all used the same driving instructor. And unfortunately, I was the first person to fail. So sorry, Kip. I very much apologize for being the first person to fail. But so when it comes to, so let's say, how did you pick Crowdcube from?
Oh, right. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I guess there are multiple crowdfunding platforms out there in the UK now. We were drawn to Crowdcube, I think, because, you know, they're actually the largest platform. So of the total money raised on crowdfunding platforms, I think it was like 180 million last year. I think 90 million was on Crowdcube, so just over half. And I think as well, the kind of the focus of their deals is much more consumer businesses. It's kind of where their kind of heart and soul is a little bit. And, you know, being a consumer business, we thought that was, you know, the best market for us to be able to connect with their audience.
Has it been much of a distraction to your day-to-day business?
You know, it definitely is a huge piece of work. So I would definitely say, if you're thinking about doing a crowdfunding round, don't go into it unprepared. But, you know, the other opportunity with crowdfunding is actually that we are engaging our, you know, core demographic. So, you know, the main people who use Crowdcube are actually parents who, you know, are going to be people who have children who need to learn to drive. And therefore, you know, having a chance to communicate to the 500,000 CrowdCube members about our proposition and get in front of them is also just a way to, you know, accelerate our marketing. So we've seen in this period, the volume of traffic on our site has, you know, multiplied just because all these people are checking out what we do. And, you know, it may not be that they're buying today, but our hope is that actually they see this business in the back of their head. They're thinking, hey, I'm going to check that out when I actually really do need it. And I think it's a great opportunity in multiple ways.
So a quick promo. So when does the campaign end?
So it ends on the 31st of March. So we're counting the days now. We are about 80% of the round complete now. So the last week is the big push to get over the line.
And for people who are thinking of investing, what kind of, you know, what can you, what's the vision going forward?
Well, so, you know, if you're investing now, you know, you can invest as little as £10 into the round. And, you know, where we'd hope to take that £10, obviously is, hopefully a pretty big return, because we're, you know, planning for a ton of growth. So, you know, what we've done to date has been building a driving lesson business that makes money in its own right. It's profitable in its own right. But our big opportunities are actually in insurance. So, you know, last year we launched our first insurance product, Anytime, to get you hourly insurance. And, you know, the next thing we're going to launch in April is now insurance for new drivers once they pass their test. And it's basically the same experience of when you learn to drive, you're using this technology, and then you're using that same technology, you know, to continue to be safe on the road. And as well, it's sort of this idea that insurance shouldn't be something that's just an afterthought. It's now thinking about those first 2 to 3 years on the road holistically. And because of that, we're able to offer you, you know, not only a unified experience, but also a better price than anyone else.
So that's, so basically you're taking kind of the, are you taking driving data and actually sending that across to your...
Exactly. So we're using black box telematics data.
Right.
And, you know, it feeds back on your speed, acceleration. You know, currently in your lesson reports, you get a map of where you drove and feedback from your instructor. This will now give you feedback on the road every day. So the lesson continues.
Are you guys comfortable with sharing? Obviously, you've seen what's going on with Cambridge Analytica and data being shared out with the different businesses. And obviously, one of the very early issues people had was that they didn't really want insurance people to...
Yeah, and I think part of the challenge with black box insurance typically has been that fear. You know, people are anxious about the idea of having to share this data and understanding how to actually even drive so that you get that good score. But what we're doing is actually from day one of learning to drive with us, we're teaching you how to master that black box. We're actually teaching you to be a great driver, you know, in multiple dimensions. And because it's the same experience from a brand that you already know, I think that's, you know, a much easier chasm to kind of cross.
So that's interesting, actually. If you think about it, so once people have passed their test, and let's say, have you had many people still follow you, like a year on?
Well, our challenge at this point is that we haven't had a product for them.
Right.
And, you know, what we're doing now is actually introducing the MyDrive marketplace. So actually today we just announced, you know, a new set of partnerships. We have partnerships now with MyPolicy, AXA, GiftGaff, Dixon's Carphone Warehouse, right, Holiday Extras, to basically give you a bunch of additional services as a learner that help, you know, bring down your cost of being on the road. So whether that is, you know, discounts on petrol, parking, car washes, insurance, servicing, you know, we basically want to be, you know, the destination for this generation in terms of motoring.
So that's very powerful, actually, because you're taking someone from the beginning of their journey and following them through as they progress, really, and after they've qualified, then you still engage with them.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think, you know, the future of marketplace businesses is actually, you know, vertically integrated marketplaces. And, you know, that's what we are, where we increase the lifetime value of our customers by offering them, you know, just one more thing. And what's amazing is when you talk to people, everybody for us has another idea that you can market to this audience. Because once you have a group of, you know, 17 to 25 year olds, that's a hugely valuable audience. And because we have a trusted relationship, and if we continue to put some of the best deals in front of them that are actually helping them and, you know, saving them money, that only, you know, accelerates the love for the brand. And means that, you know, we can offer them more things in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing if you can keep people going for that longer time. Business is gonna. So, from a growth perspective, are you looking to expand overseas, or is it within the UK?
So, our current plan is, you know, in the next year we plan to scale 8x. So, in the previous year we scaled 4x. Now it's you know, going to multiply on that because we've got positive unit economics, and, you know, we have a really great product that's so much better than our competition. our only challenge now is just making sure the entire country knows about it. So we've hired an amazing new head of growth who came from Halo. So he used to do performance marketing for Halo. And so, you know, really gets how to get app installs in a, you know, in a marketplace business. And we're going to leverage, you know, some of his knowledge to really accelerate things. But I think our focus will be the UK because, you know, my belief has always been that it's easier to sell, you know, something to your existing customer than it is to try and sell something to a totally new customer. And actually, I guess when I was at Skype, you know, I had an experience of building the click-to-call business at Skype from zero to 100 million. And we expanded it from the UK to the US. And I remember at that time, everybody said, oh, you know, it's going to be so easy because it's the same language. We already have the setup. We have a team there. It is not easy to expand to another market, you know, and I think anybody who tells you that, you know, probably hasn't done it. So I think our focus has really been, let's, you know, nail this business in the UK because, you know, marketplaces have, you know, network effects and it provides an incredible competitive advantage. So let's build the, you know, the biggest marketplace and, you know, scale really rapidly. And then actually we'll be, you know, making enough cash at that point that if we want to, you know, take some of these more risky ventures and expand to Germany or France, that's the perfect time to do it.
I mean, from what I've read though, you know, millennials are driving less and less now, right? So there's less people qualifying. Is that
So actually the number of people who are passing their test or the number of people getting a provisional is all increasing for the last 5 years. Right. The shift is that younger people are waiting longer to learn to drive. So 17-year-olds, for example, are pushing that decision out. And basically it has to do with the fact that a key motivator for learning to drive, especially in London where there's great transportation links, is I want to buy a house. I want to have a family. And I don't want to be the only, you know, mom who can't do the school run. And, you know, because now actually people are getting married later in life and it's, you know, longer before they can actually afford a home, it means that that movement's being pushed out. But the number, you know, is still growing every year. As well, you know, I think what's really interesting is driverless cars. A lot of people have this misconception, I think, that because of driverless cars, there's going to be fewer people over the next 10 years that want to learn to drive. It's actually the opposite. And the reason why is because to get to a place where you don't need a license to drive a truly driverless car, it has to have 100% you know, full autonomy. And it's actually not expected that'll be the case for 10 years. Yeah, level 5 automation isn't probably coming for 10 years. If you believe McKinsey, it could be 40 years. So I think it's actually an opportunity because a big reason why people don't learn to drive is actually, you know, that they, you know, are not really excited about the experience of being in traffic or having to struggle in their commute. But also for younger drivers, it's the cost of the insurance. And on the way to level 5 automation, we introduce a bunch of additional safety features, which actually makes cars safer to drive and cheaper to insure. And so that enables now suddenly more people to actually be in the market, but they all still need to get a full license because they need to be able to take over the car in case, you know, something happens that automation can't handle. And what that actually means then is the number of people who want to learn to drive is going to increase coming up to that 10-year period. In our case, our business, you know, we are planning to build, you know, a 10 million EBIT business within 3 years. We'll break even next year. So, you know, the cash flows that we have in that period for the next 10 years, I don't think is something to miss out on. It's sort of like saying, hey, I don't think we should invest in, you know, Windows 95 because the iPhone was going to come, you know, 13 years later.
Sure.
So there's a huge opportunity and we're the brand that's capturing it.
But from an investment point of view, how important have the VCs been for you to grow the business and the advice that you've had?
So actually our VCs, Initial Capital, are incredible. They're super supportive. You know, I talk to them on a weekly basis and they're giving us, you know, insights about other businesses in their portfolio, access to connections, being able to, you know, leverage, you know, product managers that are within their portfolio to give us insights about gaming and, you know, introduce how can we do, you know, new things with our apps or rank higher in the app store. So, you know, they've been super supportive in just actually building the business, but also, you know, in terms of, you know, doing this funding round, you know, they were the first in the game to actually, you know, say, hey, we're going to follow on and back this business because we're really, you know, happy with the results that we've had, but also, you know, bring other people into it And, you know, they're, I think, the best investors you could ask for.
So then if you're giving advice to people now seeking funding, how would you suggest that they engage with VCs and funders?
You know, it's a tricky thing because I think, you know, a lot of VCs get a bad reputation. So I think it's really important to, you know, understand who you're talking to, you know, have a clear, strong pitch and make a good impression, but also, you know, start engaging them early. So kind of in our journey, we started talking to VCs quite early on, you know, before we actually intended to raise, to just kind of get them in the loop about what we were doing as a business and for them to kind of take notice of the progress that we were making. And I think that's, you know, really made us, you know, made the difference of being able to build some great relationships.
So a slightly different area is around the, so obviously you've seen what's been going on with legal cases for Uber, and obviously Pimlico Plumbers have just recently had it's around the self-employed issues, legal issues on, you know, whether are your driving instructors self-employed? Are they considered as employees, that kind of thing? Have you had to deal with all of that?
Yeah. So, you know, when those things happen, you know, we certainly got a bunch of questions from investors and other advisors, you know, asking if we were secure on it. And so we actually commissioned some work from KPMG and others to help us kind of analyze the situation. And what we realized is actually, you know, our model is really different. So, you know, if you look at kind of where Uber got into trouble, there was actually, you know, 13 different points
right.
that came together as part of their case around how they were managing their partners to deem them being employees. Some of the critical issues were, you know, wages. So, you know, the fact that, you know, some of them being paid potentially below minimum wage. In our case, all of our instructors are really well paid. And in fact, they set their own rates. So they have the decision to say, hey, this is how much I want to charge and what I value my time at. And so, you know, that eliminates that key problem. The other one is that, you know, the flexibility. So we, you know, let instructors work when and where they want. They can schedule the lessons, they can choose to accept a learner, but then also, you know, figure out where they fit into their diary on their own.
It's a little autonomy, basically.
So it's all that autonomy that they get, and so therefore, you know, not being deemed employees. But also, I mean, they all have been running this same business independently for, you know, the last 10 or 20 years. So all we're doing is actually introducing new leads into their business. And therefore, it's a slightly different dynamic, which means that we're, you know, on the right side of the law. But as well, you know, as I mentioned with our crowdfunding round, you know, it's about building a community. So, you know, from day one, we've been thinking about, hey, how do we make these guys actually really engage in our business? And I think being owners is a key step towards that. But it also comes across in the fact that we haven't paid anything to recruit any of the instructors on our database. So, you know, we have more instructors than the AA, BSM, Red, Bill Plant, but we've paid nothing to get them because they've all come from other instructors saying, hey, you should check these guys out. You know, they're doing something really cool. Look at this app. And, you know, that makes the difference because, again, somebody who's your mate recommending you a service, that that's, you know, a huge, huge sign of trust and really important to continue.
So a couple of personal questions, if I may.
Yeah, go for it.
So obviously you've had a very illustrious career at Skype and MoneySuperMarket. How does it feel to be CEO?
So, you know, I was actually CEO of my first company back in 2003, which is also a marketplace business called Make It Matter. It was back in Canada. And so it was sort of a return to that. After I did my first business, I sold it, but realized, you know, being an engineer by training, I didn't know a lot about the business side. So going to BCG was this opportunity to actually kind of get my MBA effectively of education in the world of business. Working at Skype, you know, was the opportunity to obviously work with an incredible team, you know, who were really in the early days of agile and learning how to create software at scale. And, you know, MoneySuperMarket, I think, just introduced the world of insurance. And, you know, I think insurance, there's incredible opportunities to be had because it's still, you know, a market that hasn't fully been disrupted. It's probably where, you know, fintech was, you know, 5 or 10 years ago.
It's getting there, but yes, you're right.
And if you look at, you know, on-demand insurance, you know, on-demand insurance is 0.01% of all insurance sold. But, you know, my strong belief is, you know, one day you're going to be walking around with an anytime app in your pocket and you're going to arrive at the airport and it'll say, hey, did you remember to buy travel insurance? And you'll be like, oh, no, actually. And it'll say, all right, now turn it on because you're roaming. And then when you land back, it turns off. Or you might be like, oh, actually, you know what? probably I should turn on my home insurance because I don't want to get burgled while I'm away. Or I have an Airbnb guest, maybe double it. So those experiences, you know, are completely possible in this future. And, you know, that's, I think, now the really exciting things I want to get in the next stage of my career. And building a company, I think, has been this opportunity to also create a culture that I really love. So, you know, I think I worked at some incredible companies, but to me, I think there was always a little bit something missing. And, you know, being able to create an environment where everybody can bring, you know, their full self and puppy to work has been, you know, an aspiration. And I think it's really exciting to now be able to achieve that.
So how many people are actually working at the moment?
We have 17 people. And actually, I guess we're hiring a ton as well. So off the back of this raise, we're planning to use about 40% of the money to invest into our tech team. So building more insurance products. And I think, you know, that's probably the biggest challenge as well is, you know, recruiting great people. But, you know, building a strong culture, I think, is the key to succeeding.
So I was having an interesting discussion yesterday with another CEO of a design company. And, you know, when you have a very small team of 17 people, obviously you're working very closely with them all. How do you maintain the CEO kind of, you know, you're the decision maker, essentially, but you can't be too dictatorial. When you have a small team, how do you kind of keep that, you know, the divide as such, you know, to make sure that people, you know, you're seen as a leader, but you're also not seen as an animal?
Well, you know, I think it depends on what you define being a leader, right? So I think the idea of being a leader isn't just about, you know, setting the objectives and, you know, evaluating people, right? It's actually, you know, being in the trenches with them and leading by example. And you know, that's really what my style is about. And so I think it's about earning that respect by, you know, how do you act within the business and how do you solve problems and, you know, get people to, you know, where your vision might be. And I think then that allows you to have strong relationships and, you know, still maintain a good level of professionalism in all the things we do. You know, I'm a young guy, I have a young team. And so, you know, we are people who will go for a drink after work and hang out together on the weekend and, you know, interact on social media, which is maybe something I would have never thought to do to, you know, my boss, my CEO at Money Supermarket. But that is one of the amazing things about, you know, getting to work in a startup environment. And I don't think you'd want to miss out on that. So it's more about how do we make sure that there's trust and credibility and respect in other ways.
So two more questions. Obviously people listening to you, I mean, it must be a great job being the CEO of MyDrive, right? So it's a growing company, you're engaged with millennials, it's a wonderful marketplace you're building, and the business model seems superb. How does someone get a job like the one?
Well, you know, I think getting to run your company, it's definitely a privilege. You know, and it is something that, you know, building to that is tricky. I mean, you can do it right off the bat in some ways. You know, you don't necessarily need to have, you know, gone and worked a bunch of other places. You need an idea and you need passion. And if you have that inspiration, I think you can make it happen. Ultimately, it probably actually comes down, I think the best CEOs or the people who do turn out to be CEOs are people who have a lot of resilience, because there'll be tons of people who will tell you, you know what, you can't do that, or that business won't work, or you can't be a CEO. And if you're the guy who says, when everybody else is saying, hey, you know, I'm going to give up, if you're the guy who keeps going, well, you're the one who's going to, you know, be successful. So if you can, you know, figure out an idea that you're really passionate about and you're willing to stay with it, because, you know, ideas are cheap. Lots of people have ideas. But if you can be the guy who executes on an idea, I think you definitely can easily be a CEO.
Excellent. So the last question, if you go back 20 years in time and give advice to your 20-year younger self, what advice would you give yourself?
So I guess, you know, in the early days of my career, I, you know, didn't bring my whole self into the projects I was working, in the sense that, you know, I was afraid that, you know, maybe I was going to fail. So I wouldn't necessarily tell people what I was doing or really put myself out there. And, you know, I think crowdfunding is the perfect example where you're putting your entire business out there, right, to a crowd of people to evaluate and ask you questions. And you have to be completely transparent about what's going on. But I think, you know, in today's environment, that idea of being fully transparent and putting yourself out there, you know, is actually what breeds success. And so it's the idea that you, you know, don't need to worry about, you know, are you being an imposter? Can you really do this? Will people judge me if I fail? you start to realize, I think, when you get older, is that actually no one cares, you know? It's actually, you're just judging yourself. So if you put that aside and actually do put everything into it and put yourself on the line, you're actually, you're much more likely to be that big success that you want to be.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that. That's been very, very interesting. Good luck with the fundraising, and we'll have this podcast out before the end of the deadline. So good luck.
Awesome. I hope many of your listeners get involved. It'd be really great to see a great community of people behind the business.
Excellent. Cheers.
Thanks.